Good afternoon. This is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Cremery. The city and borough of Juneau has negotiated a conceptual agreement with cruise lines that could limit the number of daily passengers that come off their ships and into Juneau. At an assembly meeting last night, city tourism manager Alex Pierce said the agreement is still far from final, but she called it, quote, an important step in the right direction. Last season, a record 1.6 million cruise ship passengers visited Juneau. Next Tuesday, the arrival of the Norwegian Bliss will mark the start of the 2024 season. This year will be Juneau's first with a limit of 5 large ships per day. But the overall number of passengers is expected to remain about the same. Pierce said when the city and cruise lines met last week to negotiate further limits, they did not settle on a specific number for the daily limit. But she said it will likely be a decrease from the status quo and would make Saturdays the least traffic day of the week. If approved, the limits would go into effect during the 2026 season. Pierce says the city is also in discussion with cruise lines about addressing the challenges with hot berthing and downtown congestion. And the city and borough of Juneau is moving forward with a plan to relocate its seasonal campground to a different site further from downtown, despite nearby business owners' concerns. According to Mayor Beth Weldon, the city assembly is being tasked with finding an option that is, quote, the best of the very, very worst. KTOO's Clarice Larson reports.
The plan to move the city-run campground used by people experiencing homelessness was proposed last month. City officials cited an increase in illegal activities there last summer. The new proposed campground location is in an area mostly populated by commercial businesses and is next to the city's indoor cold weather shelter. City officials say moving there would make it easier to provide maintenance and emergency services to campers and ease the campground's impact on nearby neighborhoods. But last week, a group of business owners nearby wrote a joint letter in opposition of the plan. Kyle McDonald with Alaska Coach Tours testified at Monday's Juneau Assembly meeting. He says the city's proposed location would put commercial businesses at continued risk of vandalism, break-ins, and other criminal activities that were associated with the indoor cold weather shelter.
I recognize the difficult position the assembly is in right now, and I recognize there are no easy solutions. We've seen it all winter long, with break-ins of the buses, destruction of equipment, and garbage scattered all around our property, including used needles. Putting this camp right in the middle of the industrial zone area, full of local businesses, is not ideal for anyone.
He and the group proposed a different location even further down Thane Road called the Little Rock Dump, which is owned by Docks and Harbors. The group says moving the campground further down Thane would be safer for both businesses and campers. But resident Kieran Riley opposes the move. They're concerned that the location is too far away for campground users to walk to.
Pushing the mill campground to Thane with no way to access it will make it just that, inaccessible. Without a shuttle, there's not a lot of incentivization to walk all the way out the road to a tent, when you can put that tent somewhere else that's more accessible to food land or to other resources to get food.
City officials say the city just doesn't have enough staff to shuttle people to and from the campground. The assembly voted to move forward with the plan and move the campground next to the cold weather shelter for now. But multiple members say they have concerns. A final decision will likely come at the April 29th assembly meeting. In the meantime, the cold weather shelter is set to close April 15th. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And the House Finance Committee is working through its latest draft of the state budget. Committee lawmakers rejected a roughly $3,500 permanent fund dividend on Thursday. Some House Republicans are vowing to try again later, but as Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, the final figure is likely to wind up significantly lower.
How much should every Alaskan get for their PFD? Well, depends who you ask. House Finance Committee Co-Chair Delana Johnson, a Palmer Republican, says it should be about $2,300. That's the amount in the House's latest draft of the state's operating budget, and it includes both a PFD and an energy relief check meant to offset high costs.
We've tried in our office to thread a very fine line of getting the highest PFD that we can for folks that need it now.
But as you might imagine, not everyone agrees. The PFD is, after all, one of the most hotly debated issues in the legislature every year. And it's not necessarily a party line issue. If you ask another House Finance Committee co-chair, Nome Democratic Representative Neil Foster, the PFD should be the amount determined by a formula in state law. This year, it'd be about $3,500. He offered the proposal as a budget amendment at a recent House Finance Committee meeting.
I know that my constituents back home, you know, they really do need, this PFD. If we reduce the PFD, It is a regressive tax on lower and middle income folks, on families across Alaska, and I don't want to go there.
Foster is a member of the Republican-led House Majority Caucus, and it's a position shared by Governor Mike Dunleavy and many of Foster's fellow caucus members, but not all.
In order to pay a statutory dividend, this state either has to reduce its expenditures on government or tax people. Those are your two options. You have no other options.
That's Fairbanks Republican Representative Will Stapp objecting to the $800 million cost of boosting the dividend to $3,500. To make his point, he outlined a series of cuts that would free up $800 million, closing all of the state's prisons and courts and shutting down the Department of Public Safety, among other things.
I believe that the size and scope of our government can absolutely be reduced. I don't believe you can cut $1 billion out of it. I don't believe you can cut $801 million out of it because you would have catastrophic consequences.
Stapp was joined in opposition by members of the House's mostly Democratic and Independent Minority Caucus. Here's Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez.
We've heard over and over again that the statutory PFD, although it would be nice to receive, is in no way sustainable for future generations.
The $800 million necessary for the PFD boost would have come from a supersized draw of the spendable portion of the permanent fund, the earnings reserve account. That account is the state's biggest source of general purpose money. The state draws down a consistent portion of the fund's value, currently 5%, to fund schools, prisons, and other state services. And the state's never gone above that maximum in state law. But Foster's proposal would require pushing this year's draw north of that figure, and legislative budget analysts say that's risky. That proposal failed 3-8 in the Finance Committee in two separate votes. But supporters vowed to try again once the budget comes to the House floor. But over in the Senate, Finance Committee co-chair Senator Burt Stedman says even the $2,300 dividend in the draft House budget faces long odds.
It's highly unlikely that this size of dividend will materialize in the final budget because there's such an extensive amount of issues that haven't been expensed yet.
Stedman, a Sitka Republican, says there's a lot that isn't included in the House budget. Between bills that have passed the House or Senate, expected increases in union contract costs and other items, he says it's more than a quarter billion. The House's roughly $2,300 dividend represents 30% of this year's draw from the permanent fund. Stedman says that's too much. He's advocating for paring that back to a quarter of the draw, or just under $1,600.
I think we have, the Senate has the right position in that if we had a 25% dividend, we have a high likelihood that we can maintain that dividend going forward into the future.
Lawmakers are hoping to pass the operating budget out of the House by mid-April. Senators hope to finalize the budget in the closing days of the legislative session in mid-May. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And the Southeast Regional Health Consortium is suing the United States for over $8 million it claims it is owed for indirect costs in 2016. The expenses were incurred by the tribal health care provider for billing third-party private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The lawsuit was filed in the U.S. District Court of Alaska on March 28th, the last day Search could litigate the eight-year-old dispute. It names the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the United States of America as co-defendants. In the suit, Search argues that the Indian Health Service failed to account for the indirect costs of managing third-party revenues when it reimbursed for expenses in 2016. Third-party revenues are the payments Search receives from private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. Although Search is primarily funded by the Indian Health Service under an agreement called the Alaska Tribal Health Compact, the lawsuit argues that the government is obligated to pay full contract support costs, and that, says Search, includes the expenses in billing third parties. Search's brief cites a number of U.S. Supreme Court rulings as justification for its claim, but the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees the Indian Health Service, sees things differently. In a letter to Search, CEO Charles Clement last year rejecting the claim, the department wrote the IHS paid Search almost $59 million in 2016, including over $3 million for contract support costs and $17 million for indirect contract support costs. It states, nothing in the party's compact or funding agreement includes an agreement that contract support costs include any expenditures other than the amount identified in the compact. The department goes on to say that search supplied no evidence or documentation that it is owed an additional $8 million for the costs it incurred through billing private insurance, Medicare, and Medicaid. The secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has 60 days to reply to the suit. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.